There you go. All right.
Hi, I'm Nikki, I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Nikki.
And my sobriety date is April 8th, 2004. I have a sponsor and a home group. And definitely, I'm grateful to be out here. I was really excited to come out. Now I'm, like, nervous. I'm going to, like, fall over. But, you know, I love going to different meetings and feeling like, you know, you walk in and you just kind of feel like you're safe and at home. And, like, people here came up and said hi. And I mean, I've gone to meetings all over the United States and some other countries in the world, a couple, and that doesn't happen everywhere, you know. Like, I remember when I went, right before I got sober, I was living in California, and then I came back over here, just created a whole world of mess, and then ended up in AA. And when I had 9 months sober, I went back to California, to the area where like my old stomping grounds, you know, and everything, I mean, every association was horrible. I was so uncomfortable. You know, I was there with my grandparents, Anna, who I had been living with. You know, like the obsession to drink was so strong, you know. And I was, there's the only place to go to meetings really was this clubhouse. So there were tons of meetings, luckily. But most of the meetings, I just kept reaching out. You know, I kind of got trained early on, like, put your hand out, make plans, make connections with other alcoholics, you know. And I was just so off-the-wall crazy. I was like, I got to meet a bunch of alcoholics and make plans and get tied in while I'm out here, you know. I think I was there a week, but it felt like an eternity at 9 months sober. And, you know, and, like, that it isn't everywhere, you know. Like, it was very hard for me. I remember trying to connect with people out there, you know, and it just made me really grateful for, like, the home I kind of grew up with in AA, you know, and the people that I got to meet, you know, and the teachings that they gave me. Because, I mean, now if I see somebody I don't know, I go out and say hi to them. You know, if there's somebody from out of town, I ask if they want to go get coffee after the meeting or something, you know, because, I mean, I remember how I felt. I felt like I was, like, thrown to the wolves, you know, which isn't true, you know what I mean? But it's just, it's really nice to come into a place where people are just, like, so welcoming. So thank you. Thank you for that. And I don't know, I guess just tell my story since I got a good chunk of time. But I was always kind of just an irritable, discontented little kid. I just didn't feel, I really felt like my life was your fault. I mean, I just felt like that for as long as I could remember. And, you know, I wanted to switch schools. I, like, this group of friends wasn't good enough. I need to do this one. Like, major, like, status-seeking problems, you know what I mean? And it's like, whenever I got there, though, I was, like, sadly disappointed, you know, because it's, like, nothing. Like, eventually the excitement wore off, and I was right back in the same spot. And I thought, like, if my parents would just get divorced, this would be better. Send me to boarding school. Like, I got to get out of this house and put me back in this public school. Like, I mean, the list, I could increase it as needed, you know. I was very verbal about my, like, dissatisfaction with life, you know, and just so unpleasant to be around. And my parents started taking me to psychiatrists when I was 5. And, like, you know, like, red flag, but, so, which is funny, because I've actually seen, like, videos from when I was younger, and it's uncomfortable for me to watch, like, how miserable, it's like I'm trying to be miserable, you know, like, I just look unhappy, and you can hear them, like, did she do okay on this trip? How'd she hold it? You know what I mean? Like, I was breakable or something, and I was like, oh, God, you know, like, I just, like, really stressed people out from an early age, and, you know, I know that doesn't make me alcoholic, you know, but, I mean, it definitely made finding alcohol that much sweeter, you know, because, you know, nothing, I mean, there was nothing that could take the edge off, you know, and I really just felt like I was on edge all the time. I was so miserable. I loved going into, like, my pain. You know, I was like the kind of kid I would listen to music and they'd talk about these horrible things happening in their lives or like, like, you know, like that Tracy Chapman, she's talking about like this horrible, like drunk family she had, and she was abandoned, and I'm like crying because I relate while I live with like two doctors in McLean, Virginia, and I go to like, you know what I mean? Who, and I have a live-in nanny who cleans up after me, you know, like it's just like, it really, you know, there is nothing on the outside that will fix what's wrong with me on the inside. And, you know, that took me a long time to concede to, even in sobriety. You know, I had to run that idea really deep into the ground. And, you know, but I mean, I guess it just takes what it takes, you know, because when the surrender comes, it's like, you know, it's just like a whole new love for AA, you know, because it's like I know that there is a solution to what I have. And I mean, and I know that that is here, you know, and I know that is in focusing on myself, you know, because I can't do anything about everyone else as much as I would love to, you know what I mean? But so I don't know. I had my first drink when I was 12, and I didn't get drunk, but I remember it was Roderick. I had the biggest crush on this guy. He was a year older, and he'd been stabbed a couple times and shot twice, and you know, like I was just so attracted to things like that. You know what I mean? Like I was like, oh, he said I was cute, you know, and I was like, I love you. And he's the one that like brought the, you know, the beer. It was a Red Dog, and that he opened it and chugged half of it, and I just melted, you know, and we poured the rest in the punch, and I ran around like seeing if people wanted refills. Like I was just so excited to be at like this co-ed party with alcohol, and we're blasting music, and you know, we snuck out, and we were convinced the police were after us because they were like helicopters searching for someone. And you know, so we're like running around trying to dodge the spotlight. I don't know how her parents let us out. That's so weird now that I just thought of that. But 'cause it was like 3 a.m. You know, but it's like, I loved the whole like excitement around it, you know, just, I loved that thrill that I got. Like I loved being out late at night, doing things you're not supposed to be doing with people you shouldn't be with. Like I just loved it. And, I kind of chased that. Eventually though, I got my way. I got sent to boarding school. I didn't get to go far enough. I mean, I had been begging to go to boarding school since I was very young. Like, I wanted out of my house. And it was kind of stressful, to be fair. But I went out to boarding school, and I kind of, like, I met a bunch of different people there, you know. I met my using sponsor out there, you know. She introduced me to a whole bunch of different things that I had never even seen before, you know. And, you know, and she lived near me, like back in Virginia. And it's funny because she's sober now, and I've been watching her kid for 3 years, like babysitting, you know. And that happened, actually. I always cry when I get grateful. It's so annoying. But it's like I ended up like getting back in touch with her through making amends to her parents, you know, because, I mean, they didn't care at all. Like, they're, you know what I mean? They're like Class A enablers, you know, and they're just the nicest people ever, you know. But, you know, they wrote to me and they were like, you know, Laura's trying to get sober and this and that, and, you know, and, you know, I've gotten to be with her on the journey, you know, like she was with me, she was my using sponsor, you know, and I've gotten to like help guide her in sobriety. And I think it's just the coolest thing. Like, you never know, what's going to happen here. And, but, you know, we, you know, Laura kind of introduced me to this whole other world and different people and like house raves and, you know, the smoke out, which later I found out was a protest to legalize marijuana. I had no idea. I just knew that if you stayed in the fence, you could smoke there. And so I would go there. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know there was any like cause behind it, you know, but I didn't need one, you know, like feeling better was cause enough for me. And, you know, and I, you know, I got, I don't know, like that, it really, like, I loved the excitement of being with her. You know, I would not go home for weeks at a time. We stayed at this guy Word's house in D.C., and I loved it there. It was so disgusting. It, like, I didn't know you weren't supposed to go in the kitchen at first, right? So I walk in, and, of course, vibration sends all the bugs out. You know, I turn the sink on, stuff came out of the sink, and, you know, there's, like, a ashtray full of like cigarettes spilling into the tub and on the floor that's right next to the toilet. There's only AC in one room. It smells like urine outside in the summer because it's really hot, you know. And I was like, this place is so awesome. I love it here, you know. You know, I just like, just so like, I don't know where I got this stuff. You know what I mean? My dad, like, my dad really likes nice stuff. He likes to be very comfortable. And I'm like, take me to a dump heap. Like, I am good there, you know. And so I just kind of like ran around. And I ran around with a lot of different type of people, you know. Like, I could kind of change depending on like what mood I was in, you know. And because I had a lot of different friends. Only because, like, and I found this out in sobriety, you know, I thought I got sick of people, you know, so I kind of managed who I was hanging out with when, so I didn't hang out with any one group too often, you know, but sobriety, you know, through inventory, and other people taking my inventory, actually, is what happened with this one, you know, I got to find out, like, I was terrified to let people get to know me, because I already knew you wouldn't like me if you knew, you know, and I did a lot of crappy things, and you know, so of course I didn't feel good about myself. You know what I mean? There is no way to feel good about yourself when you were living the way that I was living, you know. My main goal was to feel better, you know, and alcohol was the only thing that did that for me. And I didn't want to hurt people, but if that's what happened in the process of me trying to get it, like, that's what was going to happen. And, you know, and I was not numb to my actions. Like, I felt horrible about some of the stuff that I said and did. But like, I couldn't not do it, you know, like I had to do it. Like, if you're going to stand in my way, like, you know, I was talking to, my dad about this, like the other night, Friday night, cause him and his wife took me out for my birthday. And, we were talking about just, you know, kind of like the way that I used to talk to people, you know, which was horrible. Like, I would look for, like, the weakness, you know, if you were in my way, I would look for that weakness, and I would just rip you apart, you know, and I would just go to town until, like, you would get out of my way, and, because I had somebody actually do that to me, and I was like, oh my God, like, I could not believe that I used to do that to people, you know, but on the plus side, like, that relationship is so healed that we can talk about that stuff, because I'm not doing stuff like that anymore, you know, and it's just, I mean, it's really painful, but, so, I don't know, I mean, I got in a lot of trouble. I was in more of a nuisance, but I was very sloppy and lazy, and I just, like, I felt like doing something. I was probably going to do it. I didn't like getting in trouble. I really wanted to be a goody two-shoes, but it was just too hard, and I didn't really like doing the things required to be in that category, you know. It was much easier to just, like, be a mess-up, you know, because then I could just do whatever I felt like, you know, and unfortunately, like, I got in trouble all the time. I was in boarding school. I was suspended at least once a year. I got detention every weekend. And, you know, my life was just, like, shambles in every place that it could be, you know. And it's like I would literally live for those moments that I could just get away and drink, you know, because the pressure of living life's on life's terms, like, and there was nothing going on, but it felt pressurized, you know. Like, it was just too much for me to handle. And, you know, I would live for those times where I could, like, sneak out in somebody's trunk, you know, and, like, go have a cigarette and go get drunk, you know, and then just kind of come back and try to, like, make sure the dorm parents don't smell us, you know, while we're signing in. And you know, and it really, you know, and I didn't know this then, but I ended up having, like, a breakdown my junior year in high school, you know, and by that point, during the summers, I was drinking all summer. I was drinking as much as I could. I mean, I had alcohol in my dorm room, but I was not drinking enough, you know, and I didn't know. I thought it was the school, you know, and all these other people, and, like, they're holding me down. There's so many rules. I'm, like, in a cage, and I had all these reasons, you know, and so I had a breakdown, and I was out of school for a month. And I refused to go back, and then they found alcohol in my room, and then they didn't want me back. So I guess that worked out, not for my parents, because that was well over $10,000. But I started going to public school, and I had a lot more freedom then. And you know, my drinking took off. You know, I like something like dawned on me. I was like, oh my God, I don't have to listen to what people say just because they tell me to do this, you know. And I don't know when that happened, but unfortunately it did, because then I was gone. You know what I mean? I wouldn't show up to school. Like, I remember I showed up to this one history class and people started clapping when I came in, you know, and I was like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, this is not good, you know? But I was like kind of proud of that, you know what I mean? I was like, oh, that's awesome, you know? And, you know, I mean, I did not earn my high school diploma, you know? My mom fought for me. I didn't have enough days to legally graduate, according to Virginia. And, you know, my mom, I guess my parents, this is so how self-centered, I guess my parents were getting divorced then. But they were getting divorced, and my mom was like, you know, she's horribly depressed, you know, and like all this kind of stuff. And I had no idea she had done that. Like, I had one teacher was like, how are you doing? Like, she came to talk to me, and I hadn't been to school in like 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, I'm good. You know, like, I had no idea. I was like, my throat was really sore. I was just sick, you know, and I just like made up some lie. And I remember her looking at me, and I was like, I'm missing something here, you know? And, you know, but I, you know, eventually, you know, I got out of school and you know, I moved out to California, a couple years later, you know, thinking, you know, cause that by that point, I mean, my life really, it became smaller and more unmanageable, like noticeably, like you could watch my job history, you know, like the amount of time I was able to hold a job just kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller, you know, and shorter. And I was having more conflicts with more people, and I was more convinced it was other people's fault, you know. And so I was like, I didn't know I was trying to control it, but I just was like, I need to get away from the party. You know, I'm going to go over to California. I'm going to buckle down and get back to school. And I don't know people there, and I look like I'm 10, so I won't be able to get alcohol every day, you know. And I thought, like, that was going to fix something, you know. And I ended up living with my grandparents, and because the girl that I was going to live with, she had just stopped smoking meth, I think, like 2 weeks before that. And then she disappeared, so I had nowhere to live. And my grandparents took me in, you know. And I was not able to drink the way I needed to, you know, and I really, I mean, I had been drinking, like, as much as I possibly could, as often as I possibly could before I got there, you know, so I really got to find out what happens to me when I have no solution, you know, because I mean, alcohol many times, I think, particularly out there, it was really scary, like, I think it really saved my life. Like, if I didn't find that stash, not stash, the alcohol my grandparents kept for company. I call it stash. Yeah. If I hadn't found that, you know, like, it would have been, I mean, I don't know what would have happened. Obviously, I'm not a psych, but I mean, it was really scary, you know, because I was coming up, I was trying to figure out how I could kill myself but make it look like an accident. You know, because my mom would say, like, I'd kill myself if it weren't for you kids. So I was like, okay, so I can't do this, like, too sloppily here, because then my mom will, you know. So it's like, that worked out in a weird way. But I wasn't sleeping for days at a time. I had broken out. My hair was falling out. I was just, like, pulling it out, you know. And, you know, there were times, like, I'd be going on, like, day two of not sleeping, you know. My head was so loud. I was also probably taking too much Adderall and, you know, to get, like, my schoolwork done and everything. And you know, my grandpa would get up at 5, and I would just be, like, lying on the sofa just crying, you know, because I, like, didn't know what to do, and I was so uncomfortable, and I was just so unhappy, and there wasn't anything wrong, you know. I mean, like, I didn't have a car out there because everybody was afraid that I was going to, like, kill myself or someone else. Because I was just so reckless, and which is smart. I mean, I lost my license after having it for a year and a half. So, and I didn't even drive that whole time. So, you know, and he would just, like, you know, like, rub my back and try to comfort me, and then I would get, like, an hour or two of sleep, you know. And you know, they did everything for me. You know, they fed me, they pulled me out of bed in the morning, they put me in the car and took me to school, sometimes threw water on me, actually, because I wouldn't wake up. And, you know, I was 20 years old, and I couldn't do it, you know. So it was like, when I found that alcohol, you know, I would pour that huge, they had these big plastic cups with flowers on them, I remember, and I would call somebody, so I wasn't drinking alone. And you know, I would pour a drink, and then I would talk until I was drunk, and then I would hang up on whoever I was talking to, because I didn't care anymore. You know, I was drunk. You know, and that was absolutely, it was my everything. You know, I really did live to drink. You know, I couldn't do anything else successfully. I just couldn't do it. It was too much. But alcohol, you know, it worked its magic to the end for me. And, you know, but unfortunately the periods of sobriety, you know, being dry or not drinking for a day more is what it was. It was just so unbearable. You know, I would try and sleep until I knew I was able to drink, or if I had to get up for work, I would get up for work, and I would make it through the day saying, like, just make it, like, you just have 2 more hours, you can drink after 2 hours, you know what I mean? And my spirits would start to get lifted just knowing, like, I'm going to have that drink at the end of the day, you know, or I'll just go back to sleep. And, you know, and of course, I destroyed, like, relationships all the time. I hung out with a lot of people like me, I still had a lot of people around, but they weren't really friends. You know, we were all just trying to feel better, you know, and get the next thing. And you know, I ended up coming back here after California, and they just could not take me. My grandparents could not take me living out there. And, you know, I just kind of, like, I knew I could not face life successfully if I was drinking, because I would disappear for weeks. I mean, and I would do just outrageous things, you know, and I terrified people. I remember one time I was very lonely, and I'd go out to this Starbucks in Palm Springs, and I'd do my homework there and, like, just wait for people to come talk to me. And so that I could find, like, a drinking buddy or something. And and I remember this one night I met this group of guys, and I didn't know them, and they all got in my car, and we went out into the desert, and we drank, you know. And then this girl who, like, came with us eventually, she was pregnant, so she was the designated driver. But then she wouldn't let me have the keys back, but I didn't try too hard to get them because she said she could get more alcohol, you know. You know, and I was supposed to be home at 10 p.m., and I called them from a payphone at a gas station in the middle of the desert at 8 a.m., having had their cell phone stolen, and told them that I had been kidnapped, and that's why I was not back with their car, and that I didn't know where I was. You know, like, I really did stuff like that, and I knew that they knew I was lying, you know, but I would not back down from that, you know. Like, I mean, anything to try and protect it, you know, because I didn't understand. You know, it's like I really do have that thing in me. You know, like, I put alcohol in my body, I will do anything to get another drink. I really will. And, I no longer have a choice about what I'm going to be doing for the rest of the day or the evening. I've totally surrendered that. And, you know, so I would just do, like, just really selfish things like that. And I came back here and, you know, had a stint in North Carolina, in Jarvisburg and Currituck, and with this guy that I was in love with, I met on a pier, fishing pier, where I was supposed to be on family vacation, and I didn't show up until the day we were leaving, because I had been with him drinking, you know, and I was so in love with him, and, you know, I still think about him, oddly enough, you know, but, I mean, we were two peas in a pod. The only time we fought was one time he went and got high without me, and I was so mad when he came back. I was like, you're so selfish, da, 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 you know, you know, and, you know, so, you know, I mean, I just, like, I mean, everything was just, like, it was just really crappy, and I was just so miserable, and I, you know, that relationship ended, and you know, I went about my business and being who I am. You know, I got kicked out of my house again, and at first I was really, I was like, I can't believe this. Like, I was telling everybody he kicked me out, my dad kicked me out because I hadn't done the dishes that one night, And, never mind that I had broken into his house many times. I would throw parties. He almost, like, stepped on glass barefoot out in the backyard because I had missed one of the bottles, you know. And that was verbally abusive. Like, I was like, that guy is so selfish. He's kicking his own daughter out because she didn't do the dishes, you know. Like, that's really where my mindset was. And and then it kind of switched to, like, oh, my gosh, I can use the way that I want to now. You know, because I had been trying to control it, not very well, obviously, just so I could keep a roof over my head, you know, and keep the car. And, you know, and of course I got arrested that night, like, surprise. And, you know, I didn't have any intentions of getting sober. I didn't care. Like, I liked, like, the kind of drama of getting in trouble with the cops, and, you know, I saw, like, as a notch on the belt. I was excited when I got out. I called my friends and told them, like, oh, I got a DWI, and, you know, and they're like, oh, come stay with us, you know, but I did not want to be homeless without my car, because, like, the times where I didn't have anywhere to live, at least I had my car, you know. I was like, I am not doing that without a car, because I was afraid of buses, too. Like, I was like, no public transportation. And, you know, I called my dad's girlfriend, I can't remember very well, so that it would look like I was remorseful for what I had done, and, like, maybe they'd be, like, a little more lenient, you know, and she picked me up from jail the next day, and I went home, and I passed out in my sister's bed, because I didn't have my own room, and they woke me up, and I don't remember them saying this. I remember the whole scene, though. I was just, like, lying on the bed, and they were sitting on two chairs. They pulled it up to the to the bed, you know, and they said, like, you are not allowed to stay in this house unless you go to AA, you know. And I don't remember that, but I remember, like, I am a fighter to my core, you know. If you tell me to do something, there's a chance I might just not do it even if I want to, just because you told me to, you know. Like, I will just not do things and shoot myself in the foot. You know, I'm just so stubborn. But at that moment, and I think, like, that was the first time I could remember, like, I really had, like, God's grace in my life, because I didn't have anything inside. I felt like a corpse, you know. I was totally empty. I didn't feel anything, you know. And I just got up and I went with them, you know, and they took me, and it wasn't my first AA meeting. I had gone when I was 17 because I was told I was always grounded. And my friend was like, you know, come to AA with me. And I was like, what is that? You know, and she told me, and she also told me that I didn't have to stop drinking. There were cute guys there. I was like, I will be there, you know. I was like 17, and I didn't know about the steps or sponsorship or any of that. And I think I went to, like, three meetings before my dad was like, you're just trying to get out of the house, so go back up in your room. Like, windows nailed shut, no more AA meetings, you know. They thought I was sneaking out through the windows. I was going out the door. So they nailed my windows shut. You know, I just tortured people. And, you know, and I just kind of, like, I went to that meeting and I said I was an alcoholic. You know, I didn't know what that was. I always said I was an alcoholic, even when I was drinking. I thought I loved that. You know, there was this song, like this rap song in the 90s by this guy Xzibit, and it was called Alcoholics. You know, and I would scream it out the window when we were driving through McLean, you know, and I just thought that was my anthem. And, you know, I just thought it was just like, it was good, you know, and if you're a drug addict, even better. And, you know, but I didn't know what that was, you know, and so I came here and, you know, my character defects really, really worked in my favor. I mean, I would kill for your approval, you know. And it just people pleaser to the core, and people, you know, just showed up at the house. I was used to getting in strangers' cars, so I didn't know who they were, but I guess I set it up with my parents, so I hopped in the car and went with them, you know. And someone asked if I wanted them to be my sponsor. And I remember thinking, like, no way do I want you in my life. And I was like, okay. You know, and she, you know, she got me literature, and, you know, I didn't drive, which was such a blessing, because people, AA people were at my house all the time. You know, they were coming to pick me up, they were taking me to meetings, they were taking me to events, and, like, I was at a conference, I was at Circuit Paul 3 days sober, you know, And I stayed there. I just met some random people. Luckily, it was the people hosting, so they were solid. But I stayed in their hotel room. I had just met them, you know. And so, like, I got to start to experience all this stuff in the fellowship really early on, you know. And I didn't know what was going on. I was having panic attacks all the time, every single day. Like, sometimes people thought, I remember they thought I was drunk once because I was dry heaving in the toilet because I was so anxious. And people would just tell me to pray. They're like, pray, 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 you know, it's going to pass. And I was like, you know, I was like, no way am I praying. You know, just the mere idea of God just made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I was just not interested. And, you know, so really I just got to keep my panic attacks for a bit longer until I was willing to pray. And as soon as I started praying, and I literally mean as soon as I started praying, I stopped having panic attacks, you know. And I didn't know about this higher power thing, but I definitely believed in prayer in that moment, you know, and that was enough. And I have not gone a day without praying since 3 weeks sober. You know, the power of prayer, I mean, it is very, very real. And, like, I'm so grateful for that because I knew, like, I didn't have the power to make the panic attacks stop. In fact, when I tried to make them stop, they got even worse. And, you know, and the only thing that, you know, I didn't stop drinking long enough actually to have panic attacks, so I didn't even know that I had them, you know, until I got, like, I was sober for more than, like, 6 days at a time, and I am, or five, maybe. I don't think I ever stayed sober 6 days. But, you know, I just really got scooped up by people, you know. You know, my home group at the time just became who my sponsor's home group was, you know. And I went to the meetings that my sponsor went to, you know. Like, I just didn't, I was really foggy, you know. So I was, like, prime candidate for, like, tell me what to do. And I would just kind of be like, okay, you know, and just go off and do it. And you know, I didn't know what resentment was. Or, like, people would talk about headiness. And I was like, I'm not heady. I don't hate people, you know. People were like, oh, just wait. And they would say, like, you're just self-centered, you know, because I couldn't, like, talk or remember things. I still don't remember things, but, and I would get so offended because I thought they were saying that I was vain. Like, I thought that I looked good. And I was like, I don't think that. I was like, you people are so rude, you know? And they would say, like, you're dishonest. And I thought I was more moral. I was, like, morally superior to a lot of people. Because I had all these, I had a lot of good intentions, I really did, but when I drank, I couldn't live up to a single one of them, and, you know, like, I was just, like, so delusional, about who I was, and, like, what I was capable of, you know, and, so much fear. I mean, when I say I couldn't do anything for myself, I really could not do anything for myself. It was crazy. I violated probation and sobriety because I couldn't make a phone call. One phone call, and I almost went back to jail, you know. All I needed to do was set up an appointment to go to outpatient, and it was so overwhelming to me. Like, I would look on the internet, and I was like, I can't do this. I'm going to go to a meeting. You know what I mean? Like, I was just a mess. And, but, you know, I had faith in the meetings, you know, and I got faith in my sponsor, and I had faith in prayer, you know, and I had faith in service. You know, I was given a service position. And I loved that service position because my home group was huge, and I got to stand behind a desk, so I was kind of protected. And I just, like, filled up coffee mugs, and I would give it, or, like, whatever those things, Keurigs or something, I don't know. I'd fill it up and, no, that's not it, but whatever it is, thermos, and bring it to the coffee pours. We were called coffee runners, you know. So I just went from, like, the coffee pot, poured it in the thermos, gave it to the coffee pourers. They would pour it, and I would just go back and forth in the kitchen, you know. And so I only had to interact with a few people, and I was like, okay, this is doable, you know. And that's how I started making my first AA friends, you know. It was the people I did service with. And the people that were willing to pick me up, because I lived far. They were mostly in Maryland, and I was in Virginia. And, you know, and, oh, my gosh, so dramatic. I mean, the patience that people in AA have shown me over the years is just beyond. You know what I mean? I cannot believe, you know, the gift that you guys gave me, you know, because I couldn't even stand me. You know what I mean? I felt like, you know, I couldn't ask for a glass of water when I was thirsty. I would, like, get really anxious because I felt like I was breathing too loud or, like, nobody actually wanted me in the room, you know what I mean? And people just kept inviting me back, you know? And you know, I did a lot of service. I hid out in service for a really long time. And it worked, you know what I mean? It worked until it didn't work and I had to do more work. my personal recovery. And, and I got all I did for years, honestly, was AA. I helped out with events, conferences, set up meetings. I'd get there early. I would stay there late. I was constantly putting my hand out to the newcomer, even though I didn't know what to say to them half the time, And, I was like, I don't have anything to offer, and people were just so patient because I was just like a big ball of like victim and self-pity, just so draining and just oozing like fix me out of like every pore, I've been around people like that and I'm like, I don't know how people hung out with me for years when I was like this, but they did, they really practiced, what it talks about in the 12 steps is bringing these principles everywhere, and they were helping the next suffering alcoholic, and thank God people didn't give up. Cause there were times I felt like I gave up on myself way before anybody else did, and all those little AA slogans that I judged and thought were simple and not helpful, I would secretly use them all the time. Like, don't quit 5 seconds before the miracle happens, or just keep coming back no matter what, that is like my mantra no matter what, because I learned, really I was just so miserable because I was living a life based completely on myself and in fear, and I still struggle with that, but not like that. And I learned that if I started walking through these fears, I got to develop such a sense of peace on the other side and so much security, and I would have so much more love for AA. And it was faith, that's how I started to develop my faith. I did these things I was terrified of. I did these things I didn't believe in. And I did them repeatedly, and eventually I got to develop faith. And I had these little pockets of faith. I still had a hard time with an all powerful everything, but I was I had my pockets of faith, and sometimes I still go back to that, honestly. It's I just have to do whatever I can to try and get into the solution. If my head's being negative, it's I've been trained, really out of me being so miserable, not wanting to live that way. And you guys just constantly reminding me of the solution, and then also working with new people, constantly reminding them of the solution, I'm the one who has to look for the gratitude, and I can find gratitude anywhere, I can, because there are a tremendous amount of things to be grateful for, and, I the light went out, we can save a little bit of electricity, I don't know, but... But it's really my mantra is no matter what, it's just keep coming back. It doesn't matter if you feel like it. It doesn't matter if you want to. It doesn't matter if you hate it. It's just keep going back. Because I feel like I've done this thing so imperfectly, and I'm still I still have trouble accepting the imperfections of life, but I'm able to be a productive member of society today, there was no way I could work with other people in groups or in projects or anything like that, and today I can. That sounds little, but I could not do it because I had a whip. I wanted everybody to do things my way, and I didn't actually really want to do anything. I was hoping you'd take care of it, and I was never able to follow through on anything. And if you didn't act the way I wanted, I was probably going to be nasty to you. And I don't live that way anymore. I might sometimes inside feel you're not listening, but I don't, that doesn't come out. You know what I mean? I've made tons of friends, at school, for example, which is so crazy. I was horrified of people that drank normally. I was so afraid of them. Especially people that, I guess I'm 10 years older than everyone at school, but people that were closer to my age, I was terrified of them, I really thought, I felt like I was going to get struck drunk my first 2 years, it felt like there was, something chasing me down the street, and, by really taking a lot of opposite action, and, going past those fears, it's like, surprise, there's actually nothing to be afraid of. You just practice, okay, we want to be in service here in the meeting, be in service at school, And it was amazing, like, the difference in the types of relationships I had, too, you know. I mean, when I was using, I made a lot of friends, and they were all really less than savory people, you know, and we were the ones that, like, were getting high in the parking lot, not going to school, you know, or stealing, or just, you know what I mean? Like, those are the people that would come into my life, you know, and the friends and the people that come into my life and approach me today are completely different people. I mean, I think that they're fantastic. Sometimes I'm like, I can't believe, like, I have good friends today. They're like, they're such good people. And, you know, that's like a result of the work that I've done here, you know, because on my own, I am on like a path of destruction to feel better. You know, I mean, I really create havoc trying to just feel better. And, you know, and I am unable to not drink. I've just never been able to not drink. And until I came here and you know, and the relationships, even, I mean, I thought I was going to be one of those people in AA that was never going to have relationships with people in their family. Because I just felt like they're just too sick, especially like my mom. And I was so resentful at my dad because he'd just been so nasty, and I felt so victimized. And I thought, like, even in sobriety, I felt like I had a right to like be mean to him because of the things that he had done and said. And you know, like I mean, it took a really long time, you know, and I made a lot of mistakes in sobriety, but. You know, I've been able to repair a lot of that stuff. And, like, I actually enjoy being around my dad now, you know. And, I mean, I feel so lucky to have that kind of relationship, you know. And I was telling Allison earlier, my mom is real sick, you know. And I would hear people talk about, like, oh, you know, I, like, got my nails done with my mom and all that kind of stuff, you know. And I would just get so mad, you know, because it's just, really, I was just sad. You know, my mom's just a really sick individual. And, you know, I would just get so mad that I had to take care of her and all this kind of stuff. And I've softened up a lot over the years, you know, and just tried to think, like, okay, you know what I mean? She's doing the best that she can. Like, can I bring you some groceries? You know what I mean? Like, to have you eaten today? Like, just prepare something. Even if I have to go, I make sure I have an out, you know? And try to come with that. You know, inside it still can be really difficult. It's just so sad to watch her, but bringing that kind of, like, attitude, you know, and at least my actions, you know, have opened up, like, a whole bunch, you know what I mean? Like, I can actually be kind to her. Like, people, some of my friends went over there to my mom's house to have a dinner, you know, for my birthday, and, you know, she was so happy to be around other human beings, and, like, it was just so nice, and you know, like, you know, I could still sometimes get sad, like, that I don't get to have, like, the kind of family that I think I want or that other people have, you know, but then, and I hated my stepmom, and, you know, I just, like, whatever, I had a nice little list, and, you know, because, you know, because of, like, really the work over many years put in here, so on Friday, like, I couldn't believe, like, how lucky I was. My stepmom called me to see if, like, if I wanted to go out to dinner with her and my dad for my birthday. I was like, sure, that'd be great, you know, just tell me where to go, what to wear, all that. And then she called me again later and was like, oh, hey, Nick, I was just wondering if you want to go get your nails done with me. And I know that sounds like little, but it's like I didn't get to have that kind of stuff, and I was so mad at my mom for not giving me the stuff that I thought I needed, and I hated my stepmom, and by cleaning up a lot of this stuff here, it's like I had everything that I needed, you know, I just need to make sure I'm of service to my mom, and then I can have the ability to love her and not hate her, you know. And I just had to practice forgiveness with my stepmom, you know, and try to be supportive of, like, the decisions that she was going to make, you know. And surprise, like, those little things, like shopping or anything like that, or even, like, a sane conversation, you know, that, like, made sense, like, somebody nodding at, you know, like, that kind of stuff. Like, I ended up having that in my stepmom, you know. And if I were still living in, like, all that resentment and hate and victim, I would miss out on all the tremendous gifts that I have in my life. You know, like, I can still get, like, angry about family stuff, you know, but, I mean, I feel so blessed. And I know that that is a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because when I am running on myself, I am just an expert at destroying relationships, you know, because I lash out really loudly. And, you know, it's just, it takes whatever it takes. I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm slower than most. And I don't know if that's true or not. But I do know it doesn't matter how slowly the journey goes. You know, it matters that, you know, I keep my feet on the path. And it matters that I keep trying, you know, no matter how many times I think it's not going to work. Because it does. I mean, it always works, you know. And it's, my head is just never going to be my friend. You know, I just, you know, I just have to remember that, you know, because it just produces a lot of not fun stuff, you know, but I can't give it power, you know, and that treatment, you know, it's just the prayer and the opposite action, prayer and opposite action, you know, somebody, like one of my friends says that a lot, and it's funny, I remember, when I had, like, 3 months sober, I'm working on a fifth step right now. We're in the middle of it. But when I was 3 months sober, 4 months sober, I was writing my first one. And I was a mess. You know what I mean? I thought, I'm very dramatic, and I would hear people say they were crazy. So I think that I made myself crazier, like, to fit what I heard in the meetings, you know? And I didn't know I was doing that, but I was just, whatever. And it is what it is. You know, that was my skills in forming relationships. That would be crazy, so people would talk to me. And and I was just like, I was having so much trouble getting started. And this girl, Shannon, which is funny, she's not in AA anymore, but she helped me so much when I was new. Oh, my God. She came up to me, and she's like, remember to pray before you put pen to paper. And then she did this dance and song and said, like, my head is not my friend. Hey, my head is not my friend. Ho. And I was like, oh, my God, get away from me. Like, I was, like, so embarrassed that she was talking to me. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't be seen with this person. You know, just, like, so worried about what everyone thought. And I am not kidding you. I still sing that in my head sometimes today. And it's been, like, 10.5 years. And it stuck with me, you know. And, you know, you guys really have given me, like, a totally different way to live, you know. Thank God, because nothing else worked, you know. And the biggest things I've just had to overcome have been really, like, myself, you know, knowing that, or finally believing, giving up that fight of thinking, like, I know what's going to work best, you know, like, thinking there's a door C with anything, you know. But it really is, like, as I live by spiritual principle and do this stuff, or I get to go back to where I was before I got sober. Those are my two options, you know, because I have felt that crazy sober, and it is the worst feeling I think I have ever experienced. It's terrifying because I had nothing. You know what I mean? I had to put a lot of work in, you know, but I thought that would never pass. That was 9 months of that, 9 months of crazy, you know. But eventually, like, I got back out of victim, back into the solution with step work and prayer and all that kind of stuff. And starting to act by principle again, you know, I felt something happened and I felt entitled. Like, I didn't have to work so hard or try to be so principled because they did this and this. And, you know, that is never the case. You know, it does not matter what anybody else does, you know. And I honestly, a lot of times, I don't care what anybody else does. Not, you know, like, I want to know what I can do to fit into life today. Because trying to get other people to fit into my mold created so much misery, you know, and that's, you know, that's a gift that AA gives us, you know. It's like the ability to do, see, and feel that which I could not before, you know. And already I have a long way to go, you know, but that is already my life, you know. And I'm actually, like, today I'm really excited about some of the amends. I know I'm just doing my fifth step, but I'm already so excited about some of the amends because, like, really seeing, like, even though some of the stuff I did, it was, like, when I was young in elementary school, I was, like, you know, I was, like, my gosh, like, I really want to set some of that stuff right, you know. It's, like, I don't want to have that impact on people anymore. You know, I do. I just want to be able to be a force for good. And in that space, you know, I don't find it necessary to drink, you know. And before, it was always necessary for me to drink, you know. So there are freedoms just beyond belief here, you know. It just is. I just have to always keep coming back. and storms will pass, you know, the good things will pass. But people in AA and like prayer and higher power, all that stuff, like all these tools, like they're here, you know, and I can pick them up anytime I want. So I guess that's all. I'm ending a little early, but I am really grateful to be here. And thank you so much for asking me.